I'm ready. You ready? Good morning. I will call to order the regularly scheduled Board of Supervisors meeting for this Tuesday, September 29th, and ask if everyone would please join the board as we honor America with the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Well, thank you and good morning on this overcast, cool day that Wayne Clinton didn't dress appropriately for. First item on our agenda is public comment number one. We do have one item that we're going to get to under public comment number one, but before we do that, is there anyone else wishing to address the board on a topic on today's agenda? Seeing no one moving to the microphone, we'll move on to discussion and consideration of requests for funding in the amount of $80,000 for the community building renovations at the Story County Fairground. Phyllis Ebold came to see us today. Phyllis, right over here. Thank you so much for coming up.
Well, thanks for having us. Eileen Miller and Derek Black, also members of the Story County Fair Association, are here with us today as well. My name, as he said, is Phyllis Feebold, and I am a volunteer for the Story County Fair Association. I have this strange attachment to a wonderful building here in Nevada, Iowa, called the Community Building. It's been a place where I've celebrated families' birthdays, weddings, graduations. I've exhibited a few items as myself as a 4-H'er there over the years, and now I have the joy of watching my children also exhibit their projects there. And so really it's a building that hosts the Memorial Day services here, Nevada Area Bike Ride. The list kind of goes on, and is also an educational facility for lots of different things for the school as well, such as Outreach Africa, food packaging. There have been some Box City with the multi-age. And so there have been lots of good things that have happened at the community building. This is all in light of the fact that this building really is only used about 4, maybe 5 months of the year. And so because the building is host to this many wonderful activities for our community, for 4-H, FFA, as well as beyond our community, a group of us with a passion for this old building said we need to renovate it because it is a historical piece of our community. And so we got together and decided that renovations were in order for the community building. And with that then came history. And the history of this old project is that in 1941, it was completed with the assistance of WPA. And the WPA, I needed to brush up on my history, and it was created in 1933 under Franklin D. Roosevelt in his first 100 days of his office or his administration. And it was really designed to put people back to work. And its purpose was to construct public roads and buildings. And it's interesting that almost every community in the United States had a new park, a bridge, or a school constructed with the assistance of the WPA. And it goes on to tell what their funding sources. The thing that I'd like to look at is that 10 to 30%, it was a partnership. And the partnership existed between the public and government as well. And I think it's interesting that we come back together again today to renew that partnership and consider how we can work together to restore this building. So that's the history lesson, because the WPA actually became a part of making the recreational building, they called it back then, or the community building happen. And I apologize for the size of this because it's not very clear. But if you look, the cattle barns at this point in 1941, can I get up?
Sure, yeah.
I do that on my feet. The cattle barns have been completed.
Shelly, you get
her
the
microphone.
We'll give you that.
Yeah, we just want to be able to hear you.
Oh.
Okay.
Even though you've got a strong voice that resonates, it might make
sense.
Good.
Yeah. All right, so no little pointer, too?
Sorry.
Okay. I should have come with my own. But the cattle barns have been completed, as well as the hog and sheep barn. But the item on task was the recreational building, now known as the community building. And it's interesting, right here, it defined this community building as a place where the community could come together, and then also 4-H and FFA could share their projects. So I found it very interesting that the original use of the building still exists today, and we continue on with those activities. And so, if you look at the financial status, $9,883 were local funds that were put together. And the WPA contribution was $13,506, for a total of $23,369. So, again, I thought it was very interesting that we're coming together again, hopefully, with government as well as local funding to make this a possibility. So this was from 1941. So the group got together and said, okay, if we renovate this building, what are our goals for renovation? We definitely wanted to make it a weatherproof facility. We wanted to make it handicap accessible. And probably that's one of the biggest changes, is that right now, on the main level, it's not handicap accessible. So if you're having any sort of activity, the only option, if you have somebody who's disabled, is to get them back in the car and ride them around to the basement where the bathroom facilities are. We felt that the facility could be much more user-friendly and usable from the perspective if we added bathroom facilities on the main level. We needed to shingle. We needed to confirm the structural integrity of the building and the foundation. We wanted to improve the drainage. If you've been in the basement of the facility, it's damp, it's musty, it's not very pleasant. Probably the number one thing is that we wanted to maintain the character of the first floor. Inside the first floor, there are these beautiful laminated beams. Walter Smay of Renal, Iowa, was the person who created those beams in a partnership with an Iowa State professor. And over 900 buildings in the area have those beams, of which other buildings on the Story County Fairgrounds do as well. He was very proud of his beams, and he said that never had there been a structural failure with the beams. And there had only been one, and it was a half-completed building. I think it's been interesting to watch the architects try and make sure that the beams have the load capacity, because you can't look them up in any of the architectural books now. So we have done that, and they will definitely be a part of the improved facility. We wanted to insulate, because the goal is to make this a 12-month-a-year facility. We wanted to include a kitchenette facility without impeding upon the character of the main floor. We wanted to include bathrooms on the main and basement level. Refinish the basement, making it a learning type center where people could come together in a smaller space and have that opportunity to learn. We wanted to include heating and air conditioning for the facility. I know I've been at weddings where the icing from the wedding cake literally just melted right off. We wanted to include landscaping, fans and lighting, fireplace. Right now the fireplace in the basement is all boxed off. You can't even see it. But it's beautiful. And our goal is not to have a fireplace that you have it being a wood burning because of insurance reasons, but we definitely wanted to restore the feel of the building. We wanted to, of course, confirm fire escape provisions, refinish the wood floor on the main level. We realized that a beautiful facility like this without tables and chairs is not very useful, so we did want to plan for those furnishings as well and make sure the interior railings are all safe, and just the overgrown landscaping and ivy would be substituted with new bridge landscaping as well. So those were the goals for renovation that we came up with for the building. We then went to an architect. Scott Bloom from Accord Architecture out of Ames is the architect that we chose to work with. And we shared those goals, and this is his vision that he came up with. So if you look on the main level, the biggest change to the main level is that we added a 624 square foot vestibule. And that vestibule will serve as an entry point as well as adding bathroom facilities for the main level. So now it becomes handicap accessible. And with regards to handicap accessibility, we've also added 3 parking stalls in the front of the building, and we're significantly changing the grade, meaning we want to eliminate the ramps, etc. So the handicap accessibility will be at grade. I know when I saw this the first time, I'm like, ooh, I kind of like the green space in front of the building instead of a parking lot. But I quickly realized there's a lot of value to that handicap accessibility right here because the off-street parking is the only other option. And so this also provides an area where you can easily come and load and unload for any sort of activities at the building. Also, from a fare perspective, the FFA or the mechanicals can be displayed here. So I quickly changed my mind from green space to, wow, that's a really good idea to add that parking facility to the front of the building because we will have significant green space that continues to exist. And if you look up in the top right-hand corner, that's just a perspective of what we feel like the first floor will be. So the reality is not a lot of changes. The goal is to make this improved with current heating and air conditioning without changing the beauty of the laminated beams. The exterior will receive quite an update without changing really the way it looks. So we'll put new siding, we'll put stone on the bottom, and probably the biggest change to the basement will be the addition of the retail storefront windows. If you look on the second picture down from the top. So right now that there's hardly any windows there at all. There are just doors. And so we felt like that would really invite light in and actually change that space to be usable. So the goal is to have a space that can be rented or used by the public from a level, first level perspective or the basement, or if you'd like to use it altogether, we can accommodate that as well. The basement then will have these retail front windows, and then we've added new and improved restroom facilities here as well, and a serving area for catering or events and storage and mechanicals. The great part about this is that we can allow accessibility to the restroom facilities. If you're having outdoor events or especially the county fair, you can access these restroom facilities, and we have the ability to shut off the rest of the building. So we really try to make it a place where you can use the public facilities at all times, but also make an area where you can have a private space as well. So with this in mind, this is the concept. And the concept has a price tag. And that's where we went next. As far as the project cost, it came in at $1,096,173. This was a little bit higher than when we originally started the plans. Unfortunately, when we started the plans, we were given an estimate of $820,000. We were very disappointed when it came in higher, but quickly realized that that's not uncommon for this scope of project. So with that, then we went to the Josephine Toe Fund. The Josephine Toe Charitable Trust was very generous, and they said, we would like to share in this project with you. They originally gave us $400,000, and this summer when we got the original bid back, we went back to the TOE Fund, explained what had happened, and they generously granted us another $150,000. I'm going to make this more roundabout. Mm-hmm. And so, with the TOE fund, they said, we would like you to match that dollar for dollar. And as we match that, we will need to receive grants and private donations for another $548,000 for the total project cost. Well, how have we done? We have raised, to date, $461,750. We are blown away by people's generosity, and as we talk to people around the community and the area, the exciting news is that everybody really likes the project because they have that tie back to the building, because they celebrate something there, or they experience a life event there. And so there is that tie to the building, and we receive lots of positive feedback. So positive that we have $461,750 of support from private individuals, as well as grants, as well as corporate donations. So, this is where we come to you to ask for a partnership as well. We have a bit of a shortened time frame, because our goal is to have these renovations done so that the building can be used for next year's county fair in July 2016. To do that, the builder has said, we really need to get going. So they have given us a deadline of October 15th to have the pledges, et cetera, in place. The TOE funds have given us a deadline of November 1st for the matching funds. So we are shooting for October 15th. That way we can have the builder ready to go. And what we are asking for is a partnership with you of $80,000 to help us make that. And with that partnership, then, I like that bottom number a whole lot better than if we had to add the two numbers together. We have about $6,000 left then. And we have some donors that are left out there that have said, yes, we're willing to support the project, we just have not finalize those amounts yet. So I feel like it's a very doable project with your support, and we appreciate being able to be here to ask for a partnership with local government as well. So the other thing that we are incentivized by is that the Josephine TOE Fund has said, we like your project, we want to see your project completed as planned instead of pulling back the horns. You know, it's very tempting to say, oh, well, we'll just do the first level, or we'll just do this, but that's not the goal. The goal is people have pledged their money for the entire project, so we want to make the entire project possible. And they incentivized us by giving us an additional $50,000 outright grant to be used for audiovisual equipment as well as LED lighting if we finish the project per our original. So, we are very thankful, like I said, for the individuals who have provided leadership on this project, including Dave Moody, Eileen, who's here with us today, Jeff Longmaker, Keith Costa, Linda Griffith, have been the core members of the committee, and we certainly are grateful for their leadership as well as everyone else's support of this project. I'll open up for questions.
Probably have a couple, but first question, talk about currently it's owned by whom?
The question is, who is the building owned by?
Right.
And the building is owned by the Story County Fair Association. The history is that it was owned by the city of Nevada, and it was under a long-term lease. And that has been stopped. And the property was deeded to the Story County Fair Association.
Now, do you qualify as a 501c agency as a fair board?
The question is, do we qualify as a 501c3? There is an IRS portion of the tax code that exempts 4-H and its related organizations from taxation and also allows them the tax benefit for donations.
I have a couple others.
Okay.
Go ahead first.
Now, Mike, would talk to us some more about timeline. Clearly, October 15th and November 1st are big dates. Is that for commitment of funds? Is that for receiving the funds? Talk to us about when you would actually need to receive funds if we were able to do so.
Excellent. So the question is the timing of receipt of funds. Mm-hmm. We have realized that most individuals, corporations, etc., are able to do a bit more gifting if it's able to be spread out over a time period instead of the one-and-done type model. And so what our goal is that if we receive pledges by the October 15th deadline, then we can go ahead and with construction. Because the Josephine TOEP funds are pledges or gifts. We have allowed up to a four-year gifting period, so we will have to finance the interim period for those cash flows to come in. And so we are hopeful to go ahead with the start, because the TOEP funds, as I said, will honor pledges as far as their investment. And so we are hopeful to get started based upon pledges, and then we will finance the amount until the cash flow is in over the 4-year period.
Thank you.
Well, yeah, that answered one of the primary questions, because as you know, from a county entity, this becomes a non-budgeted concept for us. And so as we look at the funds, if there was a way that it could be spread over more than one, fiscal year, there could be some potential advantages, even if it's that's as far as the actual dollars. The question, and that may or may not be the option which would be in our best interest, but it would be something that we would want to at least explore. And, you know, the good thing for me is, of course, we have our finance guru here, Lisa Markley, that kind of we always turn to when we talk about, you know, where we're at. I would assume any contributions like this would generally come from our ending fund balance. And so forth, if we were to kind of pursue that. But I was encouraged to hear that at this point, having the pledge dollars up front allows you to begin to move forward. And again, of course, that would be something you would work with whoever the contractor that you chose in terms of how the payout would occur. Obviously, you wouldn't pay it all out until it was finally completed.
Correct.
Yeah. Then my question comes back to our timetable, and this is more of a question, Rick, I don't know if you've had a chance as yet to visit with Lisa regarding, you know, the concept of what is being proposed here. Obviously, I like the concept. I like the philosophy behind what the Fair Board is trying to do with the renovation of this facility. I remember attending a function there some years ago. Obviously, air conditioning wasn't there. There was a lot of perspiration came down, but I saw it as a wonderful facility, and I believe Leanne in her first Box City event. As a county entity, as if we needed additional meeting spaces, things of this nature, what process, what option might that allow for a government entity to be able to utilize a facility such as this?
And I think, too, I didn't address that during my conversation, but I think there's economic development opportunity as well. I look at all of a sudden you have a fairgrounds that has a wonderful meeting facility. And certainly there are different shows, livestock shows, that we have hosted in the past. But I think that provides us more of an opportunity to bring people from the outside into Bay Iowa, you know, for the National Herbert Show. I know we hosted that in the past. So I think there's an economic benefit, too, for having a facility like this that could host, you know, they have usually a meal and a banquet and awards for their association. I think that that would be a first-class facility to help bring dollars into our county as well.
Paul, you and I have judged youth projects in that basement before. You got thoughts on that?
I spent a lot of time in that building. When I worked, after I retired from the Sheriff's Office, I was fortunate to work for the Parks Department here in a bit and clean that building.
Well, that's why it looks like this.
If those wood floors in that building could talk, they would have quite a story to tell. I think it's a very worthwhile project. I think it's an appropriate use of taxpayer dollars, which is what we're going to be spending on this. My only question would be to Lisa is if we can find an appropriate mechanism and what would be the best avenue for Story County. Would it be a one and done, as Phyllis put it, or would we be better off if we were to approve this commitment over, say, a 2 or 4 year commitment period?
I think we can make that work either way.
Strictly general fund dollars.
Strictly general fund dollars. I was just whispering to Ethan that the code is pretty restrictive on that.
Yep.
So it's general fund dollars. And Deb and I talked this morning about some other dollars. We came in $400,000 over our original budget in general fund dollars. We've already committed about $200,000 of that for the Alliant payout. So we're looking at $150,000-$170,000 worth of revenues that we.
Right.
The balance that we had that we didn't pay.
Well, let me tell you what my preference would be, because I agree with Paul. I think this is a worthwhile project. I think this is exactly something Story County should be involved in. It's a great building for the entire community. We got a longstanding close relationship with the Fair Board and have been a major player in what is a unique and outstanding county fair. So I'm fully on board with us doing it, and I just want to figure out the right way to do it. Lisa, tell me your thoughts on this. If we were to commit to the $80,000, what we were to say, okay, we're going to budget $40,000 in FY17. So we know as of July 1st, we would have at least $40,000, and then we're going to try to find the other $40,000 out of available revenues yet this spring, depending on how things are going. And we either find it this spring and we pay the $40,000 this spring and the next $40,000 after July 1st of 16. Or we pay $40,000 after July 1st of 16, and then we budget $40,000 again for FY17. And I just get worried about us getting out over our skis in terms of what available sources of revenues are. Using something like that would be workable if we decided to go this route?
Yeah, I like the idea of doing budgeting $40,000 in FY17 and looking at where we're at for FY16 when it comes to budget amendment time in April.
Right.
As to whether we can.
So, Phyllis, it would mean that worst case scenario, if we were to commit to this, it would be $40,000 in July of 2016 and $40,000 in July of 2017. Best case scenario, it would be $40,000 in April or May of 16. And $40,000 in July of 16, and we'd be done and good to go. And it's just going to depend on how our budget year goes for this year as to whether we're able to do that. Is that workable for you guys?
Yeah.
Yes, it is very workable.
Yeah. And then that narrows down the commitment from us to a 2 year versus you're looking at it over a 4 year, span, I think, too. And that would reduce the amount of financing options that may be available. Assuming you could secure the other funds that are being requested.
Yeah, so if we were to go this route, Wayne, what it would do is it would commit $40,000 to our yet-established budget for 2000 FY17. Okay?
Right.
And then we have some flexibility depending on where we are with the rest of our finances.
Right.
And just so everybody knows, I had a short conversation with Jeff Longnecker one day last week. Got him talked off the ledge. He was a little concerned that this was going to affect the funding that we typically do for the fair every year. And I reassured him this has got nothing to do with what our annual appropriation is to the fair board for the for operation of the fair. So this is completely separate. He was fine with that.
Thank you for
clarifying.
Yep. Other comments or questions?
No, I really like the second option here because, as you say, rather than going the full 80, this committing this FY, doing it in this manner, And, you know, we traditionally, at near the end of the fiscal year, if we look at how everything is flowing in, we could make a determination if we wanted to move that timetable up or not, or go that route. So I would be much more comfortable with that.
Yeah, I mean, and we've got a really sound budget. We just don't know where everything is going to end up in terms of our revenues this year. And while we feel more secure with where we are on the health insurance front, I'm not even entirely sure on that. We've got two new bargaining units that we've got to worry about making sure we're negotiating with. So I'd like us to have as much flexibility as possible. So we need a motion if that's the way we're headed.
I would move approval of the request for $80,000 in funding for the community building reservations. And we can word that payable in two installments. Be no later than the fiscal year 17, out of the fiscal year 17 budget.
18.
Fiscal year 18 budget.
Right. Good.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Lisa, is it clear enough the way it's been stated here what we're going to try to do? Okay. Ethan, you feel good about where we are? Yes. On this, further discussion or comments?
No.
Two.
Aye.
Clinton?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. It passes. We'll make it work. Good luck.
Thank you.
Good luck. Thank you for your work.
And thank you for your presentation putting this together. This is very impressive.
All right, that takes us to consideration of minutes for September 22nd.
Move approval.
Second.
Any corrections or additions? Clinton?
Aye.
Aye. Sanders? Aye. Consideration of personnel actions as listed, Board.
Move approval.
Second.
Toot.
Aye.
Clinton.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Consent agenda, please add road closure 1635 and 1636, utility permit 1627 and 1628.
Move approval with noted changes.
Second.
Clinton.
Aye.
Toot.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Consent agenda passes. No public hearing items today. Additional items. Discussion and consideration of HRDA's request for matching funds of $32,998 for purchasing two buses. Deb Shildroth and Brooke Ramsey. Good morning.
Good morning.
Morning.
Good morning. I have Brooke with me this morning. She is the operations manager from HRDA, so she will be able to help fill in the blanks and answer questions. And then I think also just give a quick update on where they are at with moving back into facilities after the flooding that took place about a month ago now, correct?
Yeah. August 30th, I think everybody remembers, there was a rise in the level of the river. It took us a little bit by surprise. In the past few years, we have a plan and a process in place where we relocate the buses if we're aware that there could be any flash flooding. And this year, we did not have advanced warning, so had a little bit of a surprise. Mr. Clinton joined us there that morning to see what we could do to get all of our equipment out. We've been fortunate. I don't think we've lost any vehicles. There's still one that we're having some problems with, and it may be considered a loss. Yesterday, I went over to our office to check on the renovations, and we're going to attempt to start moving back in today after this meeting this morning. So we've had, typically speaking, in the average month, we spend about $20,000 in maintenance on the fleet here in Story County. Since the 1st of September, due to the floodwaters, we've had additional expenses there on maintenance. Haven't seen the total statement yet, but we've experienced a lot of mechanical challenges due to that. We had replaced two of the existing buses with the assistance of the FTA, the Federal Transit Association grant, here in Story County. We had historically purchased buses off of the state contracted procurement, and that allows us better pricing because it's a statewide pricing. That pricing was 5 years old. So, unfortunately, the cost of the buses were much higher than what the contract with the FTA was awarded. We we're fortunate to have the federal funding to help offset that. But along with purchase of the buses, we have what we consider make-ready costs, which include the two-way radio, graphics, which are required by the DOT, and we went paperless in the buses with tablets to help us, of course, be a little more green, but keep up with technology. It has helped with our operation greatly. And, of course, the mounting equipment, the case, all of the things that come along with the tablet. So what we were requesting of the county is to consider assisting us with the match money on the buses. With those federal capital replacement dollars, we have to have some type of local match. So we typically look to either city council, county, or even state dollars if they're available. We don't often find many grants available to HRDA. We are considered a state agency, so there's a lot of grants that aren't available because we don't have a 501c3 status. In addition to that, most funders are looking to fund the operational costs to help offset the costs to the public. So capital assistance is very hard for us to find.
Would these be replacement buses or additional buses?
These are replacing vehicles that are in our fleet.
Okay.
And talk about the timetable that it usually takes from the time that you begin the process of trying to secure buses.
Once we have a contract with the federal, the FTA replacement dollars, once that is signed and in place, we order the vehicles, and they usually take, depending on the time of year, take about 4 months at the manufacturer. And then once they are brought to Iowa, it can take approximately 6 to 8 weeks before the buses are actually ready for service. And that includes everything from inspecting them to ensure they meet the state bid, having all of the make-ready process followed, filing all the paperwork, getting a title, all of those things.
Brooke, maybe you can talk a little bit about, and this is mainly for Rick and Paul's involvement since I've been on the HRDA board for many, many years. But Boone County, for example, for many years, when they would want to purchase buses or have additional buses, they were able to come up with the matching funds through private donations or, you know, the county kicking in a portion of that, but it was a local match in all of these type of situations, and so they were a little bit unique now, because under the change in how Story County is structured today, we're not exactly in the same manner since Heartland is no longer the provider of services, etc. So the concept of the match is certainly as Brooke has indicated, it is essential as far as the federal dollars that will come in. And so roughly the federal dollars is usually about 80-20 in the previous years, and I think that's kind of important to keep in mind. Now, unfortunately, the expected timetable would be ideal. We have historically found that by the time things have gone in, we haven't always been able to get them within that four-month window, and so we could be looking at a longer a time period. And I guess my question is kind of coming back, Brooke, to what we just did here with community building. The actual dollars would not be spent until the buses were delivered. How is that done?
Yes, HRDA would not have the expense until the vehicles had been delivered, you know, once we sign and accept the vehicle, because of course we have to do our due diligence and make sure that what is being given to us is exactly what we ordered and what is on the state bid. That's just part of the requirement of the procurement process. So at that point, that's when we would be invoiced for the charges and issue payment.
And we expect that to be somewhere in the 4 to 6 month range, would be expectation.
Mm-hmm.
So transportation has been a major focus. It is one of our priorities here as we look at asset funding. and what's important to us here in Story County. Talk to me a little bit about where we are with HRDA. I know there's some discussion going of adding a route that would include at least the Justice Center and Ames. Give me an update on where we are there.
Just a couple of things on that. And the county's been heavily involved, too, with the Transportation Task Force that's been in place for the past year, working with HRDA and SciRide and RSVP and other human service organizations just on public transportation for the county, the city of Ames in general. So I think that's been a good process, and it's helped us understand a lot of the mechanics behind operating transportation. But the county has, in the 15 years that I've been involved with ASSET, the county has, on one other occasion, assisted with match dollars for the purchase of a bus. And that was when Heartland Senior Services was still providing the service, but that was contracted from HRDA. So there's been that one other time, and hopefully that's not the last
place. I think that was all that long ago. But as we look forward, we have a meeting set up for later this week to meet with HRDA and the county attorney's office and the sheriff's office to talk about the possibility of establishing a route from Ames to the Story County Justice Center for individuals that need to go to that particular location for services. And, you know, we're hoping, you know, with whether it's with these buses or the existing buses, that route can be implemented and be kind of an expansion of service that HRDA can provide. And I know it's something that the board's been talking about for several years. So HRDA might be at a point now with staffing and then with buses to be able to assist in that manner.
Yeah, our staffing levels have improved quite a bit. We haven't been able to grow the program, but we've been able to maintain it. We do have some applicants now that we're looking to moving them through the process, working on their background checks now and trying to set up the next orientation. So with that, I kind of reached out to Wayne and asked who would be a good point of contact, and Deb is usually that for us, on how we can start this conversation, because Wayne has brought this up for quite some time, that due to our current staffing levels, we hadn't been able to move forward with anything. I think now is the point where we need to start that planning phase. But that some of that is going to be working with the county employees who are kind of on that ground level, and Deb's facilitating getting us all together. So I think it's, you know, definitely time to move forward with this.
Okay. Thank you. Other questions? So request of $32,998, which is $16,499 per vehicle. Payable when the buses are delivered and accepted, which, as I'm understanding it, will be late winter, early spring, would be our expectation of time frame of when that would happen?
We actually had the vehicles ordered because the grant was set to expire at the end of December. We asked for an extension on it, so it was set to expire. So they will come sooner than that.
They will come sooner than that. And what happens, where does the funding come from? Does it come out of operations? If Story County said, no, sorry, we can't help, where does the $32,000 come from?
Yeah, we would definitely have to have a budget amendment, which we've already, last month, the board was made aware. We had a couple of workman's comp claims that were very high in the winter months, slip and falls. And our workman's comp insurance is expected to increase this fiscal year about $100,000, if I remember correctly.
Right.
So it's going to be difficult for us to fit in the match money for these buses in our existing budget. But just to give you a little bit of background, the federal government says that the type of vehicles HRDA uses have a four-year 100,000 life expectancy, 100,000 mile life expectancy. However, Iowa has the 48th oldest fleet in the United States when it comes to public transportation. That is not just HRDA. That's across the state of Iowa, all 35 public transit systems. HRDA has the second oldest, only to DART, which is the Des Moines Fixed Route Service. So our vehicles, on average, have an age of 7 years. So we're almost double of what the life expectancy of those should be. To kind of, Deb had mentioned earlier about a previous replacement that Heartland had requested assistance on. I've been at HRDA 5 years. I've never ordered a replacement vehicle for Story County. This is the first time in 5 years. And it is common in our region. We do cover 7 counties, Jasper County, Marion County, Warren County. Board of Supervisors have all helped in the past support with the match money. It's a common practice, at least in our region. But yes, Rick, to answer your question, it would be very difficult to try to work this in addition to the other unexpected increases that we've had into our existing budget.
And where do the two buses that we would be replacing go?
To Story County.
No, the old ones. Where do the old ones go?
Well, one of them currently cannot be used. So that it will be scrap of any parts that we could use, you know, example mirrors and things like that, if we were to need those later. And then it would be sold for salvage.
Okay. And the second one, what happens to the one that is still old but in operation?
If we can afford to keep it maintained, then we will look to keep that in the fleet as a backup vehicle. If not, we would follow the same process. We would take the parts that we could take to save money on other repairs and then go ahead and sell the body for salvage.
Okay. Wayne, I know you have been a long-time member of the HRDA board. What else can you tell us?
Well, other than the process that she's laid out, it's certainly well within the scope of how they go about obtaining buses. If we had to rely just on the state bid system the way you generally have, we could be 2 to 3 years out getting replacement buses. The fact that with the federal dollars that were available now and the process, we would be able to actually secure buses that is very much needed in our community, not only to maintain the level of current service, but with the possibility of some of the expanding services that's there. So I'm very familiar with the process and know that, as Deb said, to my knowledge, this is only the second time there's ever been a request for some type of match funding from the Board of Supervisors. However, I've also talked to Jessica regarding this. This is a little situation where, me being a sitting board member, I'm kind of in a situation where I should recuse myself from the vote. And so, technically, I'm giving input because I'm asked the question, but normally in a situation like this, I should not, you know, participate in the vote.
Yeah, and I support that completely, but I also fully believe that you have more information than Paul and I have, and so I think it's completely appropriate for you to share that with us. Paul, any questions or thoughts?
My only thought is we've had a lot of conversations over the last 5 years that I've been here about the need to expand service and how difficult that can be in certain circumstances, so I guess this is our opportunity to put our money where our mouth is, so to speak. I think it's a worthwhile expense. You know, it would be an undue difficulty for HRDA to try to come up with these funds on their own, as she stated. So I think it's money well spent. And if we can expand services because of this, even if it's a trip to the Justice Center once or twice a day from the city of Ames, that's going to help a lot of people out that otherwise can't get here or can't get back, whatever the circumstances may be. So with that, I would move approval of the funding for $32,998 for two buses for HRDA.
And I'll second it and ask if there's further discussion. Wayne, anything you want to add?
No. I'm
good. All right. Two.
Aye.
Clinton?
Abstain.
Sanders? Aye. It is approved. Brooke, thank you. Expanding services, especially the Justice Center, is something that is really, really important to us.
Thank you very much,
Sean. It's a big day for us to hand out money. Anybody?
This is starting to sweat over there.
I'm next.
No iPads for you, Quinn. We'll take our time as we get to our next item, and it is discussion and consideration of the 2015-16 wellness initiatives. Noel and Debbie are coming to talk to us about that.
Noel's first time with Mike. Are you excited?
What's that?
Your first time with Mike. Are you excited?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Shelly, why did he start beeping at me?
They're back to green now, though.
Yeah.
Oh, they were doing all green and red and yellow.
Yeah,
earlier.
I didn't know what was going on. Noel, let's go ahead and get started. Wayne will be back in just a minute.
Okay. Just looking for my screen.
You guys are welcome to stay, but you don't have to. Yeah, you need to go.
Yeah. Okay, we'll go ahead and get it. I bet you she can
They have it. Okay. They have it. You're good to go.
Okay. Okay. So today we're going to briefly discuss what the wellness committee has been up to the last couple months.
We have been. Your microphone closer. Yep. It's still green. Okay.
I want to introduce Debbie Dean. She's from Benefit Source. She's got a wealth of knowledge with insurance and wellness programs, so I appreciate her being here today.
Thank you.
Our wellness committee has been busy planning wellness initiatives for 2015-2016. I think we've got some fresh ideas for this year I'm really excited about. Keeping the wellness mission in mind, we have focused on planning and implementing workplace programs that improve health and productivity of employees through behavior changes towards a healthy lifestyle. Our goals this year are to provide necessary tools to identify health risks and improve overall wellness and increase employee participation. Our last wellness challenge we had in May, and we had 18% participation. Our goal this year is to increase participation to 40% by July 2016. One of the tools that we believe would be beneficial for employees is to offer a health risk assessment to employees. A health risk assessment is an assessment tool or questionnaire scientifically designed to identify health risks and outline information to assist individuals in making healthful changes that impact their health and prevent chronic disease. The components of a health risk assessment, the participants would be given a questionnaire to complete. And then on the health screening day, there'd be physical data such as height, weight, blood pressure, BMI, body mass index, and waist girth. There would also be a comprehensive blood profile that would screen for diabetes, kidney and liver function, electrolytes, minerals, cholesterol, anemia, and infection. Once that information is all gathered, it's dumped into a computerized program and evaluated. That usually takes about 4 to 6 weeks, and then once that's complete, the individual would be given this health report, which is a very detailed report. It's, for example, in this example, it has blood pressure reading as 142 over 84, and so it has that reading, and it also discusses the risk category that this particular individual would be in, and then what to do with that. So in this case, they're saying you need to recheck within 2 months. And then it also goes into detail about why that's important, to why you want to be in a normal blood pressure reading, which I think is really beneficial from an educational standpoint. The confidential report includes blood results and then that educational information. And then from the employer standpoint, they are given a report that is a collection of those assessments. We do not get individual names. It's just 25% of your workforce has hypertension. I want to make that.
Yeah, we need to make sure that that's really, really clear.
Yes. So I think that would be really beneficial as far as planning our wellness programs if we had a report like that, and also for our benefit packages.
And let me just restate it so we make sure it's mm-hmm. on the record. The individualized report would only go to the individual. Nobody else would see it. Employer wouldn't see it. Nobody else would see it. They would get that. But we would get the aggregate data of what percentages of our workforce fall in a certain category, high cholesterol or whatever. Mm-hmm. Is that accurate?
Yeah, it's accurate. So the benefits of a health risk assessment. For the employees, there are quite a few benefits. It helps the individual discover their risk and make needed lifestyle changes. It invites employees to participate in appropriate health improvement plans. It allows the individuals to monitor their health over time, and it evaluates and promotes changes in personal health. And it also saves lives. A previous coworker of mine participated in a health risk assessment like this, and he hadn't been to the doctor for 10 years. And when he got the results back, he had some critical labs. And so Mercy had sent him a letter 3 days after he had this screening, and he ended up with colon cancer and caught it in the early stages. And he said, you know, this saved his life. If it wasn't for that, he probably would have gone another 10 years without going to the doctor.
He was fairly young.
He was, yep. Mm-hmm. So the health risk assessment cost and funding, the cost per participant is $65. I did get quotes from 5 different vendors, and the cost was very comparable. It's all around $65 to $68. I would propose using Mercy's program because they also provide a follow-up presentation to do a general overview on how the employees can utilize this health report. They also give us 6 complimentary educational sessions that last about 45 minutes for our employees. And they're willing to videotape those so that we can put them on the internet so that all employees have the opportunity to participate, even if they work a different shift or in a different location. As far as funding, our county health insurance plan would cover this for the individuals that participate and their spouses. It is billed under the preventative health. So that's one thing we will want to make sure we communicate very clearly to our employees, because if they go to their doctor and have a physical and the doctor and they forget their lab sheet and the doctor decides to order a cholesterol panel or kidney function test and bill it, code it under that preventative health, it's only payable annually. So the employee would be responsible to pay those bills.
So this would use their one annual preventive visit?
Yes. They would have to pay it at 100% if they got it done a second time. So Debbie and Alyssa and myself worked together to draft a letter that explains that to our employees that we would send out at the time if it was approved at the time that we let them know about the screening. We also want to offer it to employees that have insurance coverage other than the Story County. We would encourage them to contact their insurance and see if it would be a covered benefit under their plan. If it was, there would be a form that they would need to bring with them at the time of the health screening that Mercy would fill out for them, and then they would be responsible of getting that to their insurance. Another option would be for them to pay the $65 out of pocket, and then if they have a flex spending account, they could access it through there. Incentives is an important factor in our wellness program.
If you're going to grow to 40%, you better have
That's right. It benefits, it motivates employees to participate, and it increases employee morale and loyalty. As you know, we recently did a wellness survey. We had about a third participate in the wellness survey. And one of the questions was, would you be more likely to participate in wellness programs if there were incentives? And we had 56% out of 66 people say that, yes, more than likely they would participate. What we'd like to propose is to offer employees a one healthy living day, which would be 8 hours, if they participated both in the wellness screening and in the 6th wellness session.
And the wellness sessions are 45 minutes each?
Mm-hmm.
And you said they are recorded, so they could be accessed on the intranet?
Correct.
Are we talking about them participating in that either live or watching it during the workday, or are we talking about them doing that outside of the workday?
We would like them to do it during the workday.
During the workday.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you want to...
Yeah.
All right, so we would be asking for 45 minutes of their time away from their normal work in order to participate live or to watch this, but if they complete all 6 of those and do this screening, they would, in essence, get a personal day. I mean, a healthy living day, I think, is a great... But they would get one day to use as they see fit.
Correct.
Okay.
And then I also wanted to point out on that screening or that survey that we just did, there were 47 out of 66 people that would be interested in doing wellness screening. I thought that was a great, some great feedback. Along with this health report, on that collection report that the employer would get, it would also give us opportunities to look at what tools we can provide for our employees. Just like this survey did, you know, one of the topics that employees seemed to be really interested in was stress reduction programs. We had 38 people that would be interested out of 66. So that's another way that we could use this health risk assessment in training our program.
Debbie, I would think that the aggregate data, as we look at hopefully moving toward self-insurance in for Story County in health insurance, I would think the aggregate data that we might get from something like this would be hugely valuable as we try to map out what that's going to look like.
I think it will be. It will definitely be of value because other than something like that, we will have very little data to go on as we move into a self-funded plan. You know, if we were to look at moving into a self-funded plan, say, for example, in year 3, we might have maybe 12 months of credible data from Coventry. And it will be sketchy still. So having that to companion with the aggregate data from your screens would be quite valuable.
Wayne, I think I cut you off. I'm sorry.
No, not really. A couple things. When I heard you reference trying to increase numbers and involvement, what I've found over time is that word of mouth and people engaging and starting in the program has a way of spreading and getting other people excited. And maybe down the line, as we do our external communication through our employees, we might have people who are willing to just share some of the personal stories about how paying attention to a health risk assessment has made a big difference, whether it be in weight loss, just healthy lifestyle, giving them more energy, opportunities to do more. And when I think about, you know, people with children and family, as we age, we begin to realize how important that is. And I know I realize right now myself that I do mine at home, but it would be great to get 3 or 4 people together on a regular basis to engage in some healthy activities centered around probably their break time. I know some years ago Shelley was kind enough to we offered an exercise class in here, and actually it was more than I could handle after the first year. She kind of, but it was just terrific. But I do see it as something that extends the right message that we as an employer value healthy lifestyles and want to create opportunities to make sure that we maintain the longevity and the overall health of our employees. So I like the concept a great deal.
How long does the health assessment, the day they come in to do that, how long does that take?
About 15 or 20 minutes.
Okay.
As long as they have their questionnaire filled out and ready to go when they get there.
And this is something that I know, and I don't know if Debbie is aware, but I know this is something the Iowa Association of Counties have been trying to encourage more counties to increase participation in. And over time, I don't know, we didn't dwell a lot, but there are sometimes some benefits in your insurance rates and so forth if you receive a higher percentage. So I think that those are very important incentives as well.
Well, and Wayne, as for us, if we move to a self-funded arena, you know, everything we do to create a more healthy individual means potentially one less script, one less physician visit. And so those dollars add up very quickly in the fact that we pay fewer claims.
I think it's a good program. I would encourage you to reach out to the representatives from all of our bargaining units. I think the biggest thing that's going to hamper this is the skepticism about what's going to happen with this information.
Absolutely.
I've worked with a lot of these guys for a lot of years, and I know the conversations that they have, and they just flat don't believe that nobody's going to see this other than their health care provider. So I would encourage you guys to try to work with the representatives and the bargaining units and try to put to rest as many of the fears as we can, and then I think we'll have better numbers as a result of that.
Yeah, well, I mean, Paul, I think you're right. I think we got to hit it head on. But so it looks to me, you know, I like to evaluate what the county has to put in and what we're hoping to get back. And clearly, I think that the increased morale and the information on an aggregate basis that we could gain from this, and the idea that our future costs may be less by going through something like this, and that it helps us down the road of getting to a self-funded insurance plan, which I believe means a better insurance plan for our employees and in terms of funding, hopefully something that's a little more cost-effective. And what we'd be giving up to get that is basically, as I see it, 5 hours per employee that participates, roughly 5 hours, that participates to get through it, plus 8 hours that we would be allowing them to take on a paid basis. So, you're talking about 13 hours per employee that goes through this, and I just have to believe that the benefits that we gain based on employees going through it far outweigh the cost of the 13 hours of productivity that you're going to lose up front. I think you more than make that up on the back end. I think it's the right thing to do, and so I'm fully in support of moving ahead. I think Paul makes a great point. We need to be as open and out front as possible. There is going to be skepticism. There are people who don't trust that this information won't make its way to some of us. We've got to just hit that head on. And I would think that federal laws would prohibit this kind of information from moving. I mean, I think there's a way to hit this that we would be breaking the law if something other than that. But let's make sure we're fully upfront about that. Other thoughts? I take a motion.
I would move approval of the 2015-2016 wellness initiatives.
Second.
Motion and a second. Further discussion. Two.
Aye.
Clinton?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. It's approved. Good job. Thank you very much. No agency reports, no departmental reports, other reports, discussion and direction regarding the Historic Preservation Fund, Leanne Harder. This actually came to us after Phyllis Prevol came to see me, and we started talking about that building and what we talked about initially during this meeting today. And so I went to Leanne, and I said, Leanne, this sounds like the concept that this board has been kind of at least hinting toward doing, if not directly saying we want to be more involved. We've got all the Main Street programs that we're working on. We're trying to help our smaller communities wherever we can. to me, the next logical step is to look at a way to help fund some of these historic preservation projects. And so I asked Leanne to look into it. And as usual with Leanne, if those of you who can't see, I've got about 150 pages of information here in front of me. Leanne took it and ran with it.
Mm-hmm. Well, we're going to go through every page.
You better believe it. What time is it?
Yep. All right, Leah, take us through this.
Oh, well, thank you. Good morning. I just wanted a couple of caveats. Don't get caught up in the name. All the stuff that I am presenting is preliminary, and despite the amount of paperwork that was presented along with the information on the agenda, keep that in mind, it is only preliminary. The wealth of research that's available, I could spend years upon years to develop a program. I just wanted to give a baseline amount of information that the board can have a discussion and some direction from today's meeting. What I'm going to cover in the presentation really does replicate what was prepared for the agenda. I'm going to go over very basic what is historic preservation. And as Rick said, really Phyllis and the work of the Fair Association on the community building has been something that spurred this. But then going back about 15 years ago, there were some very, maybe even like 16, just some initial preliminary discussions for other properties in Story County. But those never went anywhere. Talking about the link between historic preservation and economic development, touched on those certified local governments, but county-sponsored grant programs exist, and then discussion points and next steps. I do want to just share from the National Park Service, on this quote, I'm not going to read the whole thing. My most favorite part is historic preservation is a conversation with our past about our future. In the materials I presented, I did kind of give you a different spin, too, and give you some language from the National Trust for Historic Preservation. The National Trust for Historic Preservation was established by an act of U.S. Congress in 1949, so it's not a novelty. Very long, solid history of preservation throughout the United States. But it describes historic preservation as it enhances our sense of community and brings us closer together, saving the places where we take our children to school, buy our groceries, and stop for coffee, National Coffee Day, by the way, preserving the stories of ancient cultures found in landmarks and landscapes we visit, protecting the memories of people, places, and events honored in our national monuments. And I think as Phyllis spoke earlier this morning, that is exemplified with that community building. There are so many memories that exist in that building. I love the statement, those floors, I think Paul, you said those wood floors could speak. That would be an interesting tale. There is a definite link between historic preservation and economic development. It has been defined through years and years of studies that show the correlation. We have it here in Iowa with successful Main Street programs, and part of the paper that was attached was a study that was commissioned by the Iowa Economic Development Authority a couple of years ago to really demonstrate what that role of Main Street programs has been in Iowa. And the next slide, I'm going to touch on that a little bit more, but I do like the quote from the Brookings Institute report that was commissioned in 2005 that in describing historic preservation says, as an economic development tool, historic preservation has proved its worth. Nearly any way the effects are measured, be they direct or indirect, historic preservation tends to yield significant benefits to the economy. Then transitioning to this slide that I did take out of that study that Place Economics compiled for the Iowa Economic Development Authority, the timeline starts in 1987 on the left-hand side, the bottom axis, and then goes to 2012 on the right-hand side. What this is the jobs that were created through the Main Street Iowa communities, through the preservation and rehab projects that were done along each of those in each of those communities. The green is the indirect jobs. The orange are the direct jobs, so the construction jobs. If you look towards the 2012, you'll notice that going back to 2009 and 10 in that area. Actually, right over in here. That's when the national recession hit. And Iowa's economy remained relatively flat. We didn't have nearly the impact that many other states had. But that being said, the increase in jobs for Main Street communities increased 250 to 350% over those 2 years. So when the bubble burst,
This is where we saw some continuity and growth in the economic stimulus that was needed to maintain that overall flat line and balance out what was occurring. So definitely the linkage between historic preservation and economic development is proven by this slide. Just some history. Wow, Phyllis didn't know. We didn't plan this, the history day. But this is just really interesting. National Historic Preservation, as I said, has been around even before 1949. 1906, President Roosevelt signed the Antiquities Act that allowed the president to proclaim national landmarks. Going back to your history lesson, you'll know a lot of scavengers were going to our national landmarks and looking for historic elements or remnants that they could sell.
So that's 1906.
I'm going to build up to that 66.
Okay.
Yeah, 1906 is when President Roosevelt signed the Antiquities Act. 1916, the Department of Interior created the National Park Service. And you all are well aware of what the National Park Service does and accomplishes in today's time frame. 1935, the National Sites Act, which was a national policy for historic preservation. That takes us to 1949, when President Harry Truman signed the National Trust for Historic Preservation Act that created that National Trust for Historic Preservation. That gets us to October 15th, 1966, where President Truman, or President Lyndon B. Johnson signed the National Historic Preservation Act. It is really the fundamental backbone of what you know today as the National Register of Historic Places, the state historic preservation offices that each state has, and our certified local government programs. So they'll be celebrating the 50th anniversary of that very, very fundamental act next year. Going on, what are CLGs? Another acronym I bring to you. It has nationwide five primary purposes. Encourage historic preservation at the local level, involving local level sponsorship, the establishment of commission, you name it. There are a lot of ifs, ands, and whats and checklists that go with it. But it's to take it from that federal level right down to more local, where the buildings are, making sure that's where the rubber's meeting the road. Encourage local governments to follow the Secretary of Interior standards and guidelines. These are nationwide application so that consistently local governments are applying how we preserve our heritage. Provide training and technical assistance through that State Historic Preservation Office, which you'll hear the acronym SHPO. They're always referred to as SHPOs. Provide funding to underwrite various historic preservation activities. There are tax credits, there are grant programs. There's a lot of opportunities that come through the federal level onto state and to the local level through the CLGs. And then create, again, that kind of triangular shaped partnership, federal, state, and local government in promoting and preserving our heritage through historic preservation. I don't expect you to read that slide, and I'm not going to go over that one other than to share with you in the information I prepared for today. I did analysis, kind of online research on what are some similarities and grant programs that are out there. One I did find in Iowa, that's a county, and I focused only on county. Cities across the nation have their own, but counties are a unique breed. So I wanted to just focus in on that form of local government. Lane County does have a historic preservation grant, and annually they have an award process they go through. They are a certified local government, so that is where some of their funding comes. And
is Cedar Rapids as well, or is Lane County?
I don't know. That's a good question. And that might be when we get to next steps, so I need to find out. I have a list here. I can find out, too, as I go through. But just some of the common elements that across the nation the local grant programs have. They provide support for identifying historic resources. They allow for the acquisition, relocation, which is questionable when you come to historic preservation, but sometimes relocation is necessary and can be done successfully following the Secretary of Interior's guidelines. But stabilization, restoration, these are all unique terms that have unique meanings, but they're all very necessary for historic preservation. Projects, promoting heritage tourism, business and economic development opportunities, programming, historic preservation education programming, kind of similar to what conservation does with their conservation programming. There are so many examples of that throughout the nation. And then just the unglamorous things. As Phyllis's list showed, sometimes, you know, that HVAC system, people aren't going to see that from the outside, but it's going to affect their experience, and it's going to affect the longevity and the ability of that building to function effectively and successfully. So that brings us to the discussion points and direction if you do want to go forward and do some more review on this. Again, not getting caught up in the name Historic Preservation Fund because I had no creative element in my body at that point. But again, as I said, the purpose of the report is just the preliminary research and to bring to you what kind of opportunities are out there and what we need to do further review to see what we can come up with. One, I would recommend that you assign staff, and most likely you need to meet with the State of Iowa's CLG program coordinator. This is an important one. I'm not just here promoting the CLG program, other than it does come with funding in some cases, but it requires the establishment of another commission, boarding commission. But I want to know the ins and outs of doing that, what the time frame of that would be, and then more importantly, what would that mean to Ames and Nevada, who both are CLGs in their own right, and can they maintain that status? Mm-hmm. And if so, do we coordinate? What are the problems that may exist by doing that? And then contact other communities in Story County and see if we went to be a CLG, Story County, would they be interested? Or are we just unincorporated? I mean, what's the framework that we set up? Three, identify potential funding sources. If we were to establish a grant program, what type of funding programs are out there, grant opportunities, what kind of revenue streams we would need. Then along with that, preliminary program guidelines, time frames, anything else that would, got those I's crossed T's. So the time frame, really tasks one and two that I just defined on the previous slide, those would really kick off next week, about a month to get those two things addressed and bring that back to the board on November 3rd. Depending on what happens at that point, if we said, yes, we want to be a CLG, no, we don't want to be a CLG, yes, these communities want to join us in this endeavor, then we'll take the next steps. Next steps three and four, and those would be through November and then come back. It's not reinventing the wheel by any means. There are so many great programs in existence. It's just making sure that it's specific for Story County and it addresses the opportunities that we want to provide to for historic preservation.
Well, I would say step one and two make complete sense. And then that's going to lead us to whether we go to steps three and four. I really don't want to step on Ames and Nevada if there's issues with us doing something with them already being in the program. I would support you using some time to look into this. I think it could be a real benefit to Story County. And then the other thing I saw is I don't think we're going to have a meeting on November 24th.
No.
So that would change. Thoughts from you guys?
Yeah, I agree. I was looking at the options that was listed there. And once we understand what's available to us as a county, and understanding the role of Ames and Nevada, it allows us to consider whether it's worth us proceeding. Obviously, Linn County has had a lot of success in this area. I remember a year ago when I was over there for an event with the ISAC group, we actually toured several of the buildings and the things that were there, and the businesses really talked about the role of the county played, and as you well know, with the flood that they had over there, there was a huge effort in trying to get some of those buildings back up and functioning that were impacted by the early flooding. So they've had a lot of success with a program like this. So I think it would certainly fit some of our long-term missions and goals that we have had or have established now in trying to work together with communities and municipalities outside of our larger cities to enhance, things like this. So I think it's definitely worth it, allowing Leanne to spend the time to explore the possibilities of this and seeing where it takes us.
I completely agree. Paul, anything?
I think it fits in well with what we've been trying to do over the past 3 or 4 years, 5 years anyway, so I would support moving forward with at least the first two steps.
All right, so you are directed to move forward with the first two steps and report back to us in late October. Early November.
Early November.
Early, report back to us in early November, and then we'll make decisions from there.
Perfect. Thank you.
Thanks.
Mm-hmm. Thanks, Leanne. Public forum number two, opportunity for members of the public to comment on items not on today's agenda. The board can't take any action due to the requirements of the open meeting law, but we may do so in the future. Anybody wishing to do so? Eric, you sure? Now's your chance. All right. Liaison assignments and committee meeting updates. Paul?
Pass.
Wayne?
Pass.
Announcements. Paul? Wayne?
Well, very quickly, this Thursday, I'm going to attend the Iowa Criminal Justice Summit. This is going to be held in Cedar Falls at the University of Northern Iowa. As you know, for many years, I was part of the Juvenile Justice Advisory Board for the state of Iowa, appointed first by Governor Vilsack and then Culver and under the Branstad administration. And then served in the, as a chair of the DMC committee, which was looking at disproportionality of African Americans in the juvenile justice system. This forum is also going to address where we are nationally, where we are as a state. They're going to look at racial disparities, population increases as one of the sessions. There's going to be a session looking at Iowa, the legislative reforms that have come through. Governor Branstad is going to use his video messaging to highlight where we are in the Iowa criminal justice reform session. Chief Justice Katie will give a perspective from the bench about how America's youth within the criminal justice system, as well as other issues, including sentencing and fairness. And when you look at the whole makeup of all the stakeholders, it's certainly something that I've always had an interest in, and I wanted to be part of that. This is part, again, of what my wife, with her role with the NAACP, working with the Iowa and Nebraska group, have been working with Chief Justice Katie, the governor, in looking at our reform system and sentence reform and so forth. So I think the session, all in all, is going to provide us another continuation of looking at what's happening in the state of Iowa and what changes that may need to take place when it comes to the incarceration of individuals and some of the methods that are used that lead up to the type of sentencing. So I'm looking forward to that. I'm going to call in as I talk to Paul and Leanne on the meeting for Thursday as we talk about the expansion of services for HRDA at the Justice Center. But this was something that I wanted to personally participate again because of my other long-term interests. And
well, more than personal, it's outstanding that you take the time to make sure that Story County is represented on that, and we are sure appreciative. I think one thing that, Wayne, we can all agree on is we've got too dang many nonviolent offenders sitting in jails right now, and it seems to disproportionately impact the lower socioeconomic groups, and so I appreciate your work on that.
Thank you.
If there's nothing else, I take a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Second.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
We are adjourned. Okay.